All right, a couple quick follow-ups here. One, most importantly, we had a few people point this out, Seth, that Shedeur Sanders audio that we played earlier of him giving his Mount Rushmore of QB wide receiver duos. He said Brady and Gronk, even though he's a tight end. He said Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams. The last two where he said Olave and Derek Carr, the Saints, and whoever wins the job in Pittsburgh with DK Metcalf and George Pickens. Again, this interview was taken, was done with Max Crosby before the draft. A few people have pointed out, and this makes sense, the Saints and the Steelers were two teams that at that time were believed to be pursuing, possibly drafting Shedeur Sanders. Him including them.
Yeah.
And by the way, he would have been, whoever wins the job in Pittsburgh, had he been drafted by Pittsburgh, would have been him. You know,
yeah.
So that holds up to me
it was a good move by him. I like his intent, if that is indeed what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
And yet at the same time, I feel like it's one of those things where you try to do something nice for somebody, but that nice thing that you're doing for them is going to hold them up to mockery.
Yeah.
If he gets drafted and Derek Carr hadn't retired yet at that point,
yeah.
It could be an awkward situation. So I'm going to go in and I'm just going to be sure that I show my deference to the senior guy in the building.
Yep.
But that it ends up actually making more of a mockery of both Chris Olave and Derek Carr.
And Derek Carr.
But I like where his intentions were.
I like him more now, like you. You liked him more now after playing that cut just because of the complete disregard for an actual real Mount Rushmore of the QB duos. I like it because he did it probably knowing full well that jerks like me and you would repurpose it 2 months later as if he just said it yesterday.
Well, and as I pointed out, I think he was making a mockery of the question, which I appreciated.
Yeah.
If he sat down and his dad told him to write a 500-word essay on the best quarterback wide receiver combos, that's not the answer you would have given.
Yeah.
I think he just basically made a mockery of the stupid Mount Rushmore question, which I like.
Yep. This was John Smoltz did an interview at the All-Star break this week, somewhere surrounding the All-Star game. He sat down and he had this take on generational pitchers. We know that pitchers, by and large, we know this, they're not being used, starting pitchers, the same way they were 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago. You know, it's 5 and 6 innings. It's a 100-pitch limit for a lot of guys. You know, the days of the workhorse, what Smoltz says, generational pitchers, he says they're going to be gone in 3 years. Take a listen to the names he invokes in this clip, though.
Mark my words. I'll give it 3 years. When the generational three-year pitchers, the great guys that we know are going to call it career here in the next 3 years, you're never going to see them again. The Verlanders, the Kershaws, Adam Wainwright just retired. You're never going to see Charlie Morton. You're never going to see Zach Wheeler. Like, that to me should be the narrative that organizations are going, man, we got to find a way to reverse this narrative, because that commodity is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. And we're going to have to replace it more, more, and more.
Okay, so Seth, my question to you, what's
Charlie Morton is on the Mount Rushmore of all time pitchers.
What's
Why do you hate Charlie Morton so much?
Why? The actual take, or mixing Charlie Morton in with Verlander and Kershaw and Wheeler?
Okay, I think as far as the take goes, the way I heard it was almost, I would think, like, guys drafted 3 years from now. Yeah. There's very little chance that those guys are going to go through 15 years of pitching 7 innings every night and all of that. It's like you're not going to have that same legendary status, perhaps.
Yeah.
There is like more and more and more, it's going to be a committee approach. But I don't know where did Charlie Morton come into the equation?
I don't know. I mean, he's obviously got great respect for Charlie Morton. And I do, too.
I feel like so he must have misspoke somehow.
Yeah.
And this is exactly like what I just talked about. Even if he intentionally said Charlie Morton, it's kind of a disservice to Charlie Morton. Because now people are laughing at Charlie Morton when Charlie Morton should not be laughed at.
Right.
I love Charlie Morton.
I do, too.
Yeah.
But he's not.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Charlie Morton. We can go. I'll go to your guitar concert and everything, but you're not in my list of all-time great generational pitchers.
We've had to do this a couple times today, or at least I did earlier. When that that ratchet top 100 list from Pro Football Network came out, and CJ Stroud and Will Anderson weren't in it, and yet Jalen Petrie was the 42nd best player in football. I love Jalen Petrie. He's one of my favorite guys on the Texans. I don't want to be forced into a conversation where I'm having to talk about how, well, if Petrie's 42, then Will Anderson Jr. should for sure at least be ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba because you're downgrading Petrie. Similarly, in this case, the fact that the mere mention of Charlie Morton alongside Justin Verlander and Clayton Kershaw, Zach Wheeler, there was one other name in there that he mentioned where I'm like, okay. And it got a lot of reaction to Charlie Morton. Now, I will say this. I was reading an article during one of our breaks that Ken Rosenthal wrote for The Athletic, Seth, of like what he's hearing right now around the trade deadline. Charlie Morton was awful to start the season this year. He had like a Hunter Brown beginning to like Hunter Brown start to last season. That's what Charlie Morton was doing. ERA of like 10. Charlie Morton's got an ERA of barely over 3 in his last 5 starts. And he's on a 1-year deal. He's a true rental. He's an older pitcher.
That would be awesome.
Bringing Charlie Morton back here? And if he's pitching well, it wouldn't just be a nostalgia play.
That'd be the best.
Yes.
And honestly, too, when you talk about the veteran presence of a guy who's got kind of a calming, soothing presence. There's something to be said for, so remember the story about when he found out that Lance was going to get the start in the World Series?
Yeah.
And just how he was telling the story and about how he was just so happy for Lance and how excited Lance must be.
Yep.
You know, that, and then he ended up coming in. Like, he didn't expect they have to come into that game necessarily.
Yeah, for a lot of innings.
A lot of other people might have told that story, and I would have thought, like, oh, whatever, dude. Yeah, I would have been like, that's what you have to say and everything. The way Charlie Morton tells the story, I feel like he genuinely felt that.
I agree.
So his experience on those championship teams and everything, I think it would be great, as well as just the actual pitching. This is the other thing, though, that's so funny about Smoltz accidentally saying Charlie Morton, I'm guessing, when he's talking about how there's not going to be any of those great workhorses anymore. We know that Charlie Morton, once he got to the Astros, became a much different and better pitcher and everything. He's never pitched more than 194 innings in a season.
When you
go back to like the workhorses of guys pitching 250 innings in a season or whatever, Charlie's never been that guy.
Yeah.
Even in his good years, if you take his best year and extend it out over 10 years, he's not like those all-time great workhorse pitchers.
It was a strange mention, for sure.
I think he misspoke. He was saying something else.
Yeah. Well, I disagree with the overall take. Like all these things, like this pitcher and that pitcher, and yet Paul Skeens exists. You know, like
right. But what's Paul? So the way I took it was that guys that when he says that those guys aren't going to exist anymore, I kind of think, okay, well, some of those guys that do exist are in the league right now.
Yeah.
If you talk about guys who are drafted 3 years from now and how are they used moving forward, the timeline is probably a little aggressive.
Yeah.
But I could say maybe 10 or 15 years out that the norm might be, well, 5 innings. I don't know. We don't want him sending more than 5 innings. We've got so much data that shows that over time he's going to be more valuable if we cap him off at 5 innings.
Yeah. My big takeaway is I really want Charlie Morton back on the Houston Astros. After reading Ken Rosenthal's piece here, he had like several paragraphs about Charlie Morton getting moved. I'm like, move him here. My guess is the Astros, though, Seth, are going to really, really focus in on Arrigetti and Javier and Garcia potentially being those additions so they don't have to give up. And plus the fact that you've got, I don't know how much you can count on these guys, but Brandon Walter and Colton Gordon have been viable for you. Like, can they stem the tide? It would just be fun to have Charlie Morton back on the team in the postseason.
Yeah, that's where I think the pitching, it almost might become a classic case of, okay, who's available?
Yeah.
Does it work?
Yeah.
That we're not going to be desperate to go out and find a starting pitcher, but if the right reliever or the right guy who's a starter has a certain skill set, that might work, that they're totally open to it.
Yeah.
A left-handed, I'll be surprised if they don't get a left-handed bat of some sort.
I would too. Yeah. He's talked about that. Dana's talked about that every time he's been asked.
Yeah, he's not even hiding that.
No.
He's just like, look at the lineup.
Yep.
Nobody has as few lefties as we do. We got to mix this up a little bit.
I had a buddy remind me, we talked about that Willie Ames interview that John Harris and I did with, we called him the fake Willie Ames, back in 2007. Misbooking. We booked the wrong Willie Ames for an interview. Willie Ames, kids, was this actor. Somebody reminded me that right after that, Seth, The very next, during the break, you know, we had the screen that told us all the phone calls that were coming in. We get a call. One of the calls up there says Vito from The Sopranos.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, okay, now we're going to get people calling in as the fake this and the fake that. It turns out that the Joe Ganascoli, who played Vito from The Sopranos, was driving her. He was in town for a cigar show. He was driving her, whoever was driving him around town for his appearances, had it on 1560 The Game.
Uh-huh.
And he heard the bit and he called in because he wanted to tell me and John how funny it was.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh.
Yeah. And he and I got his cell phone number. He and I have remained like friends since then. We've stayed in touch.
No kidding.
Yeah. I interviewed him in person at the Super Bowl when we were there in New York City back in 2014.
Oh, that's right. I remember that.
Yeah.
Does he do a bunch of those Sopranos podcasts and everything?
He doesn't. You know what? He does now? He was a chef before he got into acting.
Yeah.
So he's lost a ton of weight. Like, he looks really good. He was so heavy on that show. He goes around and does dinners at people's houses. He cooks, like, they'll have 8 friends come over. And not only does he cook the meal, but then he sits down and tells Sopranos stories with them.
Oh, really?
And he lives in New Jersey. So you got all these very wealthy New York people that invite him over to do that.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
You know what? It's kind of related. I'd never heard this story before, but Steve Buscemi. Mm-hmm. So you talk about guys being an everyman kind of. So Steve Buscemi was a fireman in New York City before, as he was like taking acting classes and just kind of nobody. You look at Steve Buscemi, nobody expects him to be an actor, you know, probably receiving very little encouragement in it, but decided he wanted to give a hand at acting. So he was a fireman in New York City and ends up getting some acting jobs, goes into acting, has an incredible career. I guess after 9/11, he just, like, without any fanfare or anything, just showed up at his old fire station and just started working.
Wow.
Like, in the efforts and everything.
Wow.
It just, like, anonymously, other than obviously, like, the guys in the firehouse probably knew him and everything.
Yeah.
But it was like, and people only knew about it because there was, I think somebody had taken a picture, didn't know it was Buscemi, just took a picture of a firefighter kind of slumped over, fatigued or whatever.
Yeah.
It was Steve Buscemi.
Has he ever talked about that? Because that's really
interesting. I don't know. I didn't dig into it at all.
Yeah.
That's almost one of those things that I don't want to, just in case it's actually not true, I don't want to find out that it's not true.
Well, no, but I got to imagine, like, he's sitting there, he's like, boy, there's all these people pitching and trying to help, and I'm actually qualified to go do this.
Yeah.
You know,
that's, well, and all those first responders have died. And just,
yeah.
So he knows, and his fire, I believe his fire station was one of the ones that got
right
hit
down there.
So he knows that they need people. You
that's
know?
A great story. That's a great story. All right, final segment coming up. We'll find out what the guys got going on In the Loop. Also, we're going to hear from a brand new Texan here. Do we like the moxie and the bravado of what could end up being one of the leaders on this new offensive line? We will have that for you coming up next.